Welcome to Scope It Out. In this episode, Dr. Smith will be speaking with Professor Richard Harvey. They will discuss the article, Acute Radiology Rarely Confirms Sinus Disease in Suspected Recurrent Acute Rhinosinusitis. This edition of Scope It Out is sponsored by Medical Center Pharmacy, leaders in topical sinus therapy for chronic sinusitis and polyp patients. Founded in 1990, MCP provides innovative formulations that combine steroid, antibiotic, and antifungal treatments. These medications are instilled directly into the sinuses using various devices. Successful insurance billing, thorough patient education, and prompt delivery are why physicians and patients trust MCP as their premier pharmacy. Please visit www.mcpnc.com or call 1-800-930-8785 for more information.
Hello and welcome to Scope It Out, the podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your host, Dr. Tim Smith, and today I'm very happy to be joined by Professor Richard Harvey from Sydney, Australia, and we will be discussing his article, which is currently available in Early View Online, entitled, Is Sinus Surgery Indicated for Recurrent Acute Rhinosinusitis? Richard, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I think this is one of those topics that is very, it's always timely and it's always interesting and it's certainly a controversial topic. And I know, Richard, you do not shy away from controversy. So I've been excited to talk to you about this topic for some time. So I'm glad you're on with me. You know, the other thing is we don't have a great deal of literature to help us sort this problem out. And I think there are a number of issues that are interwoven here, and let's explore them a little bit. Just for some background for the listener, you sought to study patients who presented to the clinic with suspected or self-diagnosed recurrent acute rhinosinusitis, and that is patients who have multiple episodes of what are thought to be acute bacterial rhinosinusitis through the course of the year. And you were able to identify and follow 27 patients over a six-year time period who fit this description. Is that fair to say so far?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things there. You introduced my research as is surgery indicated, but in fact, all we really were doing in the study was saying in these patients who have self-diagnosed episodic respiratory events, is there actually evidence of a bacterial sinusitis? And you're right, we actually had 40-something patients that fit the criteria of this, in whom were absolutely convinced, who I was totally not convinced that they should have an operation or that they should just be managing it as a bacterial sinusitis. But their referrer did, they did, and I said to them, look, I'll put myself out there. You come back and see me during the acute event. And we got almost 30 patients came back during their acute event who they said they would get it all the time, you know, multiple times a year. And I said, let's first couple of days of the event, often within 24 hours or in the midst of their symptoms, I said, let's get you in, do an endoscopy, do a low-dose CT scan, ask you some questionnaires, examine you, and let's see what's really happening. And that really formed the basis upon which the results are then presented. And the title of the manuscript is that acute radiology rarely defines sinus disease in suspected cases of recurrent acute rhinosinusitis.
Yeah.
But then, of course, that leads into what do we do with these patients?
Yes, absolutely. And actually, I'm embarrassed to say I misstated the title of your article, which is Acute Radiology Rarely Confirms Sinus Disease in Suspected Recurrent Acute Rhinosinusitis. So I apologize about that.
But that's okay. You actually gave the title in spirit, though, Tim, which is in surgery
right.
Really indicated.
Yes, this is your this is your underlying agenda, is to bring this out and talk about it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Okay. And I think I do it because over the years as a tertiary rhinologist, and I'm sure I probably resonate here with some of my colleagues, we see patients who come in who have what they believe to the heart of them that they have sinusitis.
Mm-hmm.
And the key feature in these patients is it's episodic. It usually lasts less than 7 to 10 days. it's almost always bilateral. It's almost always bilateral. And their scans and studies in between are almost usually normal or near normal. Near normal that where maybe you'd really have to be, you know, have a lot of faith to believe that, you know, some minor change is representative of sinus disease. This is the sort of cohort we're talking about. And they always make excuses as to why the scan might be normal, but they're convinced they've got sinus disease. And they'll often say that antibiotics maybe it make them feel a little bit better. We always scan was never done at the right time. I already started taking antibiotics. There's always some excuse as to why it's not quite right. And that was really the nidus of why we decided this whole concept of acute review in my practice. And really, it's sometimes hard to get some of these patients back. I think quite a few of them went away and we saw someone else and had surgery elsewhere. But the ones who came back were happy to sort through it. Some of them had actually already had surgery. I even in that cohort had someone who went away and had surgery and came back to prove me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because she felt that she was a little bit better after surgery. Obviously, it didn't stop her getting these flare-ups because she had one and came back and saw me after her mini-fess she had. And sure enough, it was completely normal. So I think there's a real problem here with the diagnosis of what's happening in recurrent respiratory exacerbations and what we're doing as in terms of management.
Okay, so now your patient population that you followed at baseline, when they were asymptomatic, they would have said at the baseline visit they're asymptomatic, and they at that time had near normal CT and normal endoscopy.
Exactly right. In this population, these are not people in which were asymptomatic. Then when you scan them, on the right-hand side, there's diffuse mucosal thickening in the maxilla and a pacified OMC. You know, when they're well. This is not what we're talking. We're not talking about a patient who presents with a fungal ball in the right maxillary sinus or, you know, clearly some sort of unilateral pathology. Because in those patients, in my opinion, who present like that, when they get flare-ups, they say, when I get a cold or my sinus flares up and they've got this abnormal scan at baseline, they say my left side, the side that's got the scan, gets swollen, gets pressure, gets discharge. My left side, and then it settles down again. And then they have an abnormal scan in an asymptomatic period still. And we know that a unilateral OMC procedure is curative for those patients, often curative, and a fantastic application of sinus surgery. But these are not these patients. These are patients who have essentially a normal exam. Mm-hmm. They say they feel normal at baseline, although you'll see from my study that they often report sinonasal outcome studies as being a little bit abnormal.
Yeah,
and they're
quite abnormal, actually. I mean, their mean SNOT 22 score at baseline when they were presumably asymptomatic was 40, which, for the listeners, it's the scores between 0 and 110. 110 is the worst it can be. When you look at patients under 20, you think, well, gosh, they don't have a lot of symptoms. But 40 is pretty substantial score for a baseline score in this patient population, at least in my clinical experience. Now, admittedly, I've never studied SNOT 22 scores in these patients between their episodes, which is kind of an interesting question in and of itself, but you've shown that it's actually quite high.
Yeah, and I also tried to put it, because that's what I thought too, and I tried to put in all the domains for someone to have a look at, and it's not as if it's just in one domain, if you have a look at it. It's just not the nasal symptoms. They sort of score highly in some of the other things, the facial pressure, the ear symptoms, the sleep, just across the board. This raises, of course, you know, what's really going on in these patients. I feel, if you said to me, probably in my cohort, probably the most common thing here is that these patients have a rhinitis. Mm-hmm. And they have some form, but some of it may be non-allergic, but some of it's classic allergic rhinitis. And I look back on these patients now, and I think many of them have a feature of rhinitis that we published recently in IFAR, which is middle turbinate head edema. And when you look in these patients, they have a little bit of edema of the middle turbinate head, but they're not that symptomatic. And what I think is happening in many of these patients, not all of them, because there are other, I listed down some other diagnoses that were borne out in these patients, but I think a lot of them just have a background sort of subclinical rhinitis. They're not really symptomatic of it, and they either get a viral event on top of a sort of a subclinical rhinitis going on in their nose, or they get a flare-up of their rhinitis, the so-called acute intermittent rhinitis. They then feel, especially in the situation of a viral flare-up, that their symptoms are so much worse than someone else who's just had a virus. And it probably is because of their background allergy. And therefore, they feel they must have something more severe.
Something more.
I think for patients, it's much more validating to have something like sinusitis. Sounds better. It sounds more, I think, it validates their experience more than just having a rhinitis exacerbation.
I would have thought that if they had a viral upper respiratory tract infection, that it would have shown up on the CT scan, and yet, in your patient population, even when they were acutely ill, you still had the vast majority of these patients show normal CT scans or near normal CT scans.
My experience, though, Tim, is that teaching of ours that we were told that when you have a viral event, your sinuses are really abnormal, I'm not sure that really holds true. Because having an in-office CT scan over the years has shown me that most people, when they have a viral event, really just have a viral rhinitis. They don't normally get really extensive mucosal thickening of their sinus cavity. I think some of them do, and you get some patchy changes. And they really only get extensive sinus changes when they start to develop bacterial co-infections. And then this then raises that whole extra issue that when we see acute bacterial sinusitis, but when it presents CT scan-wise and clinically, it's almost always unilateral. But that's not the feature of these patients. If you listen to patients who get recurrent acute sinusitis, the ones that we're really describing in this population, they almost always have bilateral symptoms. And I almost think in my mind, scientifically, what are we treating when they say they're bilateral? Are they magically getting a bilateral OMC obstruction and then magically getting bilateral secondary bacterial just happening on both units at the same time? I think the ability for that to be synchronously happening just seems highly unlikely.
So we've got this patient population, however, that let me ask you this. You raise in your introduction, you raise a debate as to whether this clinical entity, recurrent acute rhinosinusitis, even exists. Do you believe that? Do you question whether there is a population of patients who suffer recurrent acute rhinosinusitis?
I absolutely believe it exists, but it's not in the descriptor that I think primary care physicians and patients believe it to be.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of recurrent acute, I think of someone who has unilateral symptoms,
mm-hmm.
a unilateral forehead headache, a unilateral facial pressure, and they will often have a relatively abnormal CT scan. Like you can really see unilaterally and associated with their symptoms that they've got this unilateral phenomenon.
During an episode.
Well, maybe even in between episodes still.
Hmm.
You know, there's something going on unilaterally on the side in between episodes. So in between episodes, you might just have some very mild thickening of one maxillary sinus or...
But isn't that chronic rhinosinusitis when they have chronic changes and symptoms they don't clear?
Maybe not clear perfectly. Well, that's a very tricky one. I think they always have some sort of minor abnormality. Because then we're saying, what is it that we're treating? They have to have unilateral disease in my mind. I find it very hard to believe that it's happening bilaterally, synchronously all the time. That's like someone coming in and saying, I just happen to have bilateral sinusitis and you're hearing loss. I mean, if someone came into an otologist with that diagnosis, they'd be like, really? Sure,
yeah, but when you get a viral upper respiratory tract infection, logically, it's going to affect both sides of the nose. It's going to affect both middle meati and potentially obstruct both osteomedial complexes, right?
So they also then have a bilateral anatomical predisposition to it as well.
Understood. So, yeah, and you're right. Most of the literature has demonstrated, some of the literature has suggested that there are anatomic variants like concha bullosa, like infraorbital ethmoid cells that predispose.
Haller cells
that predispose to recurrent acute rhinosinusitis. You really didn't look at anatomic variance in this patient population.
No, I didn't. Yeah. Purely based on the fact that these patients were having these classic sort of acute respiratory symptoms again. And actually some of them, you can see in my study, had had an OMC procedure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, already. So
right. Still, that's the other interesting thing about your population. When I think of recurrent acute rhinosinusitis population in my clinic, I think of people who have not ever had sinus surgery before. Whereas 45% of your patients that you followed actually had undergone a prior endoscopic sinus surgery procedure, which would suggest to me that they're more likely to have some chronic variety of the disease rather than a recurrent acute variety of the disease.
So it wasn't quite as high as 45. 45 had had some procedure before. So many of them had like a turbinate reduction, septoplasty.
Okay.
And to clarify that, quite a few of them had an OMC procedure as well. And you know, most of the ones who had OMC procedures, I had actually seen before. So I'd seen them prior to their surgery, told them, I don't think you have sinus disease. I think you're getting some sort of rhinitis flare-up. They'd gone away, sought second opinions. You can imagine they bought themselves sinus surgery pretty easily, Tim. You know, the story.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And conviction. And then they came back to see me. Like I said, one woman came back to see me to sort of prove me wrong, and the rest of them came back to see me because they were no better and really came back to talk to me then about what might be happening. This is, I think, as a tertiary rhinologist, this is that whole thing that I see these patients, not in this cohort, but just in my general practice, a lot of patients who've had many fair, simple, and the feature here is that these patients would come in, they generally have well episodes in between, near normal studies, bilateral symptoms, they then buy themselves an operation, they're no better, they usually go through a honeymoon phase, we can talk about this later on, about 6 months, and then they're back to having the same flare-ups happening over and over again. And that actually makes up a big population of the referred patients to me. So going back to the study, so the study had a small group who'd had some surgery, a lot of people that had septum and turbinate surgery, it's ongoing sort of sinus events.
Okay, so two issues kind of come to my mind. One is, and something I think we can probably all agree upon, that's me and you and everybody listening to this, that acute bacterial sinusitis is overdiagnosed at many levels of our healthcare system, and patients who have viral colds are being treated unnecessarily with antibiotics on probably a routine basis, certainly in the United States, and I imagine in Australia too. And of course, our ability to differentiate between a viral sinusitis and a bacterial sinusitis is challenging. It's mostly guesswork based on the patient's clinical course and the data that they present to us, but it appears that the time frame of their symptoms is probably the most important factor to consider in differentiating between viral and bacterial sinusitis. Certainly CT scan cannot do that for us. So I think we can all agree that too many antibiotics are being prescribed for viral infections, that acute bacterial rhinosinusitis doesn't occur nearly as commonly as it is diagnosed across the world probably. So there's that issue. The second issue is there is this group of people who have recurrent acute rhinosinusitis, and I feel like this is a very difficult diagnosis to make, to nail down for the patient, and I feel like these patients slip through the cracks of our healthcare system and don't necessarily get the care that they deserve because at some point or another, they've had a CT scan, it was normal, and they are therefore defined as not having sinus disease. So it's kind of taking the opposite approach of the approach you've taken here and saying, in this case, the CT scan sort of prevents the patient from obtaining the care that they really probably deserve. What do you think about those two points that I've just made?
I think if a scan's normal in between an event that is recurrently unilateral, I think your sentiment is true. Like somehow, I think if someone presents with a unilateral dysfunction of their sinus cavity, it's quite clearly unilateral on the one side every time. you know, like you said, with little allergy flare-ups, little viral flare-ups, something triggers it off and they get sort of a unilateral dysfunction all the time. But somehow their scan just happens to be near normal in between. Maybe you're right. And that's where point-of-service care imaging and things like that, you know, really does add to patient's care. And as you saw in my study, there was 4% of patients who fit into that group.
Right.
It's just that, it's just this huge group of patients that I think it's much easier to believe that recurrent respiratory events, which we know can have viral, allergic, other sort of etiologies, could be cured in adulthood by having just your osteomyelitis complex modified on both sides. And I think that's where our logic goes out the door as surgeons as to what we're really believing that we're trying to achieve. And I think there's some commonality in these patients. One commonality is we suppose that a lot of people have some clinical allergy. Another commonality is that often these people are younger and they have young kids and they don't really acknowledge that they're just getting viral events associated with children. And then in some groups, the diagnosis is just wrong. They just don't have sinus disease. They've got some sort of migraine or something else going on, and they don't like the idea of that diagnosis. I think in that patient population, and this is reflected in John Delgadio's study on triptan therapy, is that there were patients in there, like in John's triptan study, where when we got them in and scanned them and showed them they didn't have sinus disease, and then they responded to using like a nasal steroid at the time of their surgery. Like John Delgadio's study on triptan, patients who were convinced they had sinus disease and headache, but then they responded to a triptan, that you told them what was going on, and they left with the belief that I've got sinus. Even though you could show to them that's what's going on. You're a triptan responder. Your CT scan's normal during the acute event. They still just walked away and just said, they went back to their antibiotic-seeking behavior because that, in their mind, it's very hard to convince them otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, I know that somebody who's been fortunate to not suffer many infections, sinus, what I thought were acute bacterial sinus infections in my lifetime, I think I've had two of them, and they were both when my kids were in that preschool daycare years. And I was getting more viruses at that time. So I contracted more viruses from my kids, but a couple of those viruses led to what I was pretty convinced was acute bacterial rhinosinusitis. And I actually treated myself with antibiotic therapy and, you know, I got better. So are you telling me that I probably over-treated myself with antibiotics during that time? Or how do you determine when you're going to give someone antibiotics for acute bacterial rhinosinusitis?
So the question there is that, I agree with you, Tim. I've had episodes when my kids were young, and I used to give myself, like, and I'm talking about when I was a medical student, maybe even as a trainee, as a resident, I used to give myself courses of Augmentin. I'd take 5, 10, 15-day course. And eventually got better, and I felt better for it because I was doing something proactively. But as an adult now, as an ENT surgeon, I actually don't do that. I treat myself with anti-inflammatories, and it goes away as quick or quicker than when I took the anti-inflammatory.
When you say anti-inflammatory, do you mean like a topical steroid spray, or do you mean...
Topical and or systemic, yeah. Either one, depending on how bad it is. And I took that approach with my children, Tim, and it worked very, very well. And so I've never given my children antibiotics for a recurrent respiratory event. And then if you look at the guidelines then, you say, what is the guidelines? The guidelines actually talk about unilaterality and fever and pain on one side. And this is what we see. I think if you recount the acute bacterial sinus cases you've had to look after as a rhinologist in people who are otherwise well, so we're not talking about people who bear broader inflammation in their sinuses, like they have a chronic inflammatory sinus disorder, like someone with chronic asthma. You know, when they get bacterial events, it's a different phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
But we're talking about people otherwise well. How many people have you admitted to hospital for treatment that had bilateral symptoms?
Yeah. No, it's a good point. I've never thought about this before, but as I recall, my episodes, my personal episodes, were unilateral. And has anyone studied this before, I'm not aware of any study. So you're saying our logic goes out the window as surgeons, because when we operate on this disease, we tend to do bilateral osteomedial complex surgery. And I think you have a bit of an axe to grind with regard to overutilization of surgery in cases like this. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. But I'm not a denier. So be very careful here, you know. I could imagine some patients fitting the criteria who just absolutely happen to have some unique phenomenon that's causing them to have bilateral osteomedial disease.
Yeah.
But I think there should be an acknowledgement that for that to be happening synchronously in a patient, synchronously every single time they have a respiratory event, does set up a lot of fortuitous circumstances that have to align. I just find that to be very hard to believe. Whereas you and I know as a rhinologist that when you see a patient with a unilateral OMC dysfunction and you offer them a surgery, you're just so convinced they're going to do well. So convincing. I mean, you just the positive predictive value of a good outcome there is super high. But when you enter this world of suddenly having people coming back, they're normal in between, you don't really have any changes on a CT scan, convince yourself, and you're doing bilateral OMC, that group, I think, I see a lot of them as a tertiary rhinologist are unhappy with their intervention. Now, whether that be a bilateral OMC surgery, a balloon procedure, some sort of mini procedure, even these patients, they get turbinate reduction in between, they're well, you know, that doesn't really help them. They come back, they fill my clinic with referrals. And I think they're the ones who are motivated to come back and see me. God forbid all the ones who have just decided that my surgery didn't help and I'm not going to bother about it anymore. But I think the population is broader rather than narrow. I don't think I'm just seeing the failures. I think I'm seeing a sample of the motivated failures.
Right, right. So to summarize some of the points that we've made here, I think your points and from your article, acute radiology rarely confirms sinus disease in suspected recurrent acute rhinosinusitis, because most of these patients who have acute symptoms related to their nose and sinuses do not have acute bacterial rhinosinusitis. Fair point to make?
Yes.
On the other hand, there is a subgroup of patients under this umbrella of chronic rhinosinusitis who have this recurrent acute rhinosinusitis variety of the disease. They are few and far between. So if you're making this diagnosis routinely in your practice and operating on patients like this routinely in your practice, you should probably examine that practice, because you may be overutilizing both antibiotic therapy and sinus surgery for this patient population.
And unfortunately, I think that's really true, Tim. I gave this talk at a national meeting. A very humble colleague of mine who has a lot of humility came up and said to me, Richard, he goes, that was a great talk. He goes, but unfortunately, I think when I listen to that, there goes probably half my sinus practice.
Mm.
And that's very humbling. I mean, I think really he didn't disagree with the findings. He acknowledged in his cohort of patients, guy follows up his patients many months after.
Mm-hmm.
He agreed that actually in a lot of the patients that he's offered OMC and he's actually bothered to follow them out. It was very humbling to him. He said, actually a lot of them do come back with the recurrent symptoms.
And on the other hand, I would say that if you are a non-believer in recurrent acute rhinosinusitis, I think you're missing some patients out there who actually deserve that diagnosis and who actually can improve with therapy. The interesting thing is that most of the literature has suggested that bilateral OMC surgery is the way to proceed in this patient population, and yet that doesn't necessarily make sense with some of our clinical observations, and this is something that probably needs to be studied more carefully. That is the unilaterality versus bilaterality of recurrent acute rhinosinusitis.
And the one thing that to summarize, I put this in the discussion because I couldn't really put it into data. These would be the features that I would say that now I use, having done this study as a flag, is that the patients who I really want to convince myself, because it's not zero, as you saw. This is 1 in 25 patients who will have true sinus disease here. But the patients who have, is that?
It's close to zero, Richard. It's close to zero, Richard. And you know you're going to be criticized that you're going to be criticized that you're going into this with a bias. That your bias is this disease doesn't exist, or that these patients do not know what's going on with themselves, and I'm going to be the one to explain it to everybody. I could hear someone giving you that criticism.
Yeah, it's fair enough. And you might even say that, okay, listen, maybe the patients in my study were biased there. So maybe the 4%, what is threefold, fourfold, fivefold? You know, you can actually have many fold and it's still a small percentage. So there's a group there, but I think when patients come to you who have essentially normal scans, who have a history that really, when you listen to it, not when the PA or the resident takes them and tells you secondhand, but you listen to it, it's really 7 or 10 days they seek treatment. It's less than that. It all comes and goes within that period, and they have bilateral symptoms. I pause for a moment. And I say, is this really sinus disease? And it's not to say that bilateral RMC procedure is a pretty safe procedure in most people's hands, but I think if we over-apply sinus surgery, it gets a bad name. And I think, unfortunately, these patients then are disenfranchised and with their intervention. And unfortunately, this then prevents the other
right.
group of patients who actually have unilateral symptoms, who have a CT scan that shows a very minor abnormality on one side, even between their events, who you acknowledge that really do need an intervention. And they do fantastically from it. They think that it's curative, their unilateral OMC.
Okay.
So this is where I would like our profession to sort of pause and think about this.
Fair enough. And those are good points, I think, for us to end on. Our podcast was a little bit longer than typical, but you get me and you together talking about this, and that's going to happen.
Yeah, controversial.
Controversial,
thanks
for sure. Thank you so much, Richard. I really appreciate it, and congratulations on your article. Look forward to talking to you again sometime in the future, Richard.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening. Scope It Out is a co-production of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology and Wiley. All opinions in this podcast are those of Dr. Smith and his guests and do not necessarily reflect those of Wiley or of the sponsors.